Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
6:15 on this Tuesday morning. Man, it was hot yesterday when I did get a chance to leave the hospital for a little bit and walk around. It was miserably warm, highs of 87 today, 86 tomorrow, 86 Thursday for the first day of the second weekend of Jazz Fest. 50% chance for showers on Friday, highs of 84, 60% on Saturday, highs of 81. And then 80 for a high on Sunday. We'll be into May by that point and highs of 80, but dry. So maybe a little bit wet for a couple of days of Jazz Fest, but we'll get through it, right? And thankfully no golf tournament today. This weekend, rather. David Schultz joins us now, professor of political science at Hamline University, to talk about the first 100 days of President Trump's second term. How you doing, David?
I am doing well, and I hope you're well, too.
I am. I think that some people are going to see these poll numbers and either discount them because they think that the president's doing a great job and that they're happy, and that's fine. That's great. But tell me what these poll numbers show.
Well, we have multiple polls, so it's not just one source, and they're all indicating the same trend, that when Trump took office, he was doing fairly well in the polls. They would call it he was above water. That means he had an overall net positive rating. But what's happened now over the last 100 days is that consistently across all the polls, he's now, again, underwater, where more people disapprove of him than approve of him. Now, some polls might have slightly different numbers, but he's also suffered the most rapid decline in approval ratings of any president going back, you know, as far as they've been doing polling. So the bottom line is, just in terms of supporting or liking his performance, the honeymoon's over. To use that phrase here, you know, the honeymoon period where people say, new president, we like him that or what, that's over. He's now down to about where he was when he was president, but not quite, like mid to low 40s. And if you look at his two signature issues, the economy and immigration, where for the longest period, that's where he had his biggest support, he's crashed there pretty significantly. So simple bottom line here is that his poll numbers are all significantly going in the wrong direction.
So how can that be, I guess is what I'm saying, if so many people were in favor of him when he got elected, what changed?
I think a couple of different things. One is that he was being evaluated in comparison to Joe Biden. I think I'm speculating on this, mm-hmm. You know, and people did not like Biden's performance. And so they said, well, Trump looks pretty good. And maybe they look back at his first 4 years with, you know, the proverbial rose colored glasses and said that things looks not so bad. But also there's an indication that he's really, he claimed he had a mandate and he's overplaying it. And he's pushing on a lot of issues such as tariffs, the economy, immigration, and poll numbers are suggesting that the American public doesn't like the idea that he's defying the courts. And so I would say, you know, he's overplaying the hand that he was dealt, and that's really leading to a lot of the problems in the polling numbers.
From a legal standpoint, because I know you you teach law as well, constitutional
right.
law. He's not seizing any power that has not been ceded to him, correct?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, I had somebody, one of my students asked me the other day and said, how has Trump amassed so much power? And I said, it's less that he's amassed so much power than Congress isn't doing its job. And I said, what's happening is that, you know, our framers had this concept called checks and balances, separation of powers. You know, I think we all learned that somewhere in, you know, grade school, high school or something like that. And Congress is supposed to be doing its job, and it's not. It's you know, it could come back at any time and pass a law that says, no tariffs. It could come back and say, we're going to redo the immigration policy. But what's really happened is they've basically given up their power. And because of that, that's why Trump is doing all these things, because Congress isn't doing its job.
So let's look at it historically. Presidential job approval at or near 100 days and compare it. I guess I'm looking at a poll here going all the way back to Truman and Eisenhower and Kennedy and Johnson. How do his numbers stack up? And even with Trump 1 as opposed to Trump 2.
Yeah, well, if we do that kind of comparison, that he's got lower polling numbers now than any of those predecessors going back to, again, probably Truman. I mean, Roosevelt becomes difficult because that puts us back into the 1930s when polling was really, really not very good. But I could say that he's dropped more rapidly than any other president going back to Truman, and he's at lower number. His approval ratings now are lower now, even compared to his first term as Donald Trump as president of the United States.
I would think part of this is cause and effect, because he has, if you look at the executive orders that he's issued, again, he's not seizing any power that Congress has not ceded or given to him. Because of the amount of executive orders that he's issued, he's done far more than any of his predecessors, whether you like it or not, just in terms of activity, he's done far more than any of his predecessors have even come close to doing. Is that accurate?
In terms of executive orders, yes. Now, if we look, obviously, if we were to go back to somebody like Roosevelt, I mean, that's still the gold standard in terms of, you know, the 1933, you know, the Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, by the way, in his first 100 days, the amount of legislation that was adopted then far eclipses anything that any president has really ever done in American history. And remember, when he's taking over, it's the beginning of the Depression, you know, or not the beginning of the Depression, it's during the Depression. And so his is kind of an unusual benchmark here. But in terms of the number of executive orders that he's issued, by far exceeds. Now, if you're asking what has he accomplished with those executive orders, that becomes a different question, because issued a lot of executive orders, but also almost all of the executive orders are being challenged in the courts. And the vast majority of what he's executive ordering is being hung up or stayed by courts. And this is a continuation of a pattern from his first 4 years that, again, if we go back to Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, and compare all the presidents in terms of their success rate in court, Trump's first term in office had the worst success rate in court of any president. What's that, going back like 7, 8, 9, whatever number of presidents that is at that point. And the same thing is happening again now. He's doing a lot of stuff, but it's the courts are just saying, you can't do that stuff. You're exceeding your constitutional authority.
So I guess that means if they hate Trump, they love the Democrats, right? Not so fast, my friend. We'll talk more when we come back. 6:22. David Schultz, our guest, professor of political science at Hamline University. Democrats not doing so well either. Traffic now, WWL. It is 6:25 and a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking about some poll numbers with President Trump. And people are texting in. Well, one person's texting in, apparently thinking that there's a conspiracy and that it's all negative and George Soros and blah, 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 blah. And people are entitled to believe what they want. However, it'd be interesting to see if these same people think that this poll is lying when they talk about the Democrats not being viewed much better than Trump, are they?
Oh, the best thing that Trump has going for him and the Republicans have going for him right now is that the Democrats poll even worse at this point. I mean, coming out of the election, you know, last November, you could say that the Democrats emerged as a third party. And what I mean by that, if you ask people when they exited the polls, do you consider yourself Democrat, Republican, or other? First it was Republican, then it was other, then it was Democrat. And it hasn't improved at this much at this point. So the Democrats are really, really in a bad position at this point, because people just don't like the Democrats right now. And you look around and you try to find where the Democrats are in terms of taking on Trump, or what they have to offer as an alternative. And I still think they're back to where they were last year is to say, why should you vote for a Democrat? Because I'm not Trump. I'm not sure that gets you very far, and the poll numbers are reflecting that. So, yes, the same poll that is saying that Trump numbers have tanked, the exact same poll is saying that the same polls are saying that people don't like the Democrats, and
so,
they're doing worse.
So the only reason I mention that is, and for the two or three people that constantly text in whenever they hear anything that is in any way slightly negative about Trump, presume that there's this massive conspiracy, I would just ask you then, does that same conspiracy apply to this poll, which shows that people like the Democrats even less than they do Trump? So it'd be kind of hard to say, you know, the whole thing's cooked except for this, that I want to believe in that. And it just kind of makes you look in the mirror and ask yourself about confirmation bias. With all of that being said, Trump's not up for re-election, I don't think. They talk about Trump 2028. Maybe it's a fundraising thing. Maybe it's a different Trump. I don't know. But the point is, it's all about his political popularity or the strength that he wields with the members of Congress at this point, right? Not necessarily the American people?
Absolutely correct at this point. And he still has a pretty powerful grip over the members of Congress's party. And that becomes the real interesting question now, because the members of Congress, you know, all the members of the House of Representatives, for example, are up for election next year. And this doesn't bode well for him, for these members of Congress. Now, granted, probably three quarters of them, and almost all of them, are safe. But there's about 35 congressional seats in the United States that are swing that'll determine the balance of power, whether the Democrats hold the House or Republicans. And those are the seats that Republicans need to be incredibly nervous about, because right now the odds are that the House will flip. Well, House will flip, and it always happens. The president's party generally loses the House of Representatives in the midterm elections. And so these are Republicans who have to think, well, if they keep towing the party line for Trump, they may be looking for a job come November, come January 2027. Yeah.
And for those, again, that think, you know, there's some kind of propaganda, this, that, the other thing, it's got nothing to do with Trump. It's about correction and the way politics work in America with a presidential election and then the midterms, right? I mean, that's pretty much a historical fact.
It is a historical fact compounded by the fact that now both parties.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Overplay their and claim mandates. You know, for the most part, you win by a couple percentage points. You win by, narrow margins, as Trump did, like by 1.5 points. You don't have a mandate, and all the logic in the world should suggest that, guess what, it's that close. Hey, folks, how about compromising? But American politics now is winner take all, take no prisoners. And that just adds to the counter reactions in the next election.
Thank you, David. Appreciate your time and insight as always. David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Jan Moeller, executive director of Invest in Louisiana, about absenteeism in schools, and some lawmakers want to, I guess, take school funding away for students that are not in attendance. But having a teacher and a family, I know sometimes that's beyond the scope of what the school can do, and they fight with the parents to get the kids in school. So if you take funding away from the school, is that really fair? We'll find out when we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. 6:44, 16 till 7. Tommy Tucker, thanks for joining us on this warm, humid Tuesday morning. Jan Moeller joins us now, Executive Director of Invest in Louisiana. How you doing, Jan?
I'm great, Tommy. Great to be with you.
I had a story that I was told people out earlier. A guy gets stranded on Mount Fuji, way, way up in the air, 10,000 feet above sea level. And then he had to go back. He forgot his phone and went back to get it and had to be rescued again. And I was asking people what the history was with cell phones. Somebody said, I've had 6 cell phones in 20 years. Yeah, I got my first one after Katrina. Still have all of them. Last phone I lost was a BlackBerry, so it's been a while. Somebody else said, never. Believe it or not, I have not lost a single phone ever, knock on wood, from somebody else. I lost mine in Walmart on Christmas Eve 2 years ago. And I got to tell you, Jan, if there is a time that you don't want to lose your cell phone, it's on Christmas Eve. And Walmart would not be the place. Have you lost cell phones ever or not?
I've left them places, but I've never actually lost one. I've forgotten them and had to go back, but never on Mount Fuji, Tommy.
No, and as crazy as it is, every time I go back to that Walmart, and it's been a year and a half, I still go check and see if anybody turned one in. Let's talk about this bill about absenteeism, because, you know, they got some commercials that we run about absenteeism, what a problem it is. They have a TV commercial that they're running, which is very good because it's this long scroll of names of kids that are absent from school, and it's a big problem, and we can talk about that, and then we'll talk about what this Louisiana lawmaker wants to do, which I think might be just a terrible idea. But let's talk about absenteeism in general. How big of a problem is that?
Well, it's an enormous problem, Tommy, and it's one that's actually getting worse. I live in East Baton Rouge Parish, and there was a report recently that 1 in 3 kids in public schools is chronically absent. That's more than 10 absences per year. And obviously, if kids aren't in school, they can't learn. And so this is absolutely a major problem.
Nearly 1 in 4 chronically absent last year, according to student data. I have a teacher in the family, and I know the challenges that the teachers face with, you know, is a kid coming to school? Where are they? What's going on? Haven't been here in a while. So it is the parents' responsibility to get the kid to school. This House Bill 185 by Barbara Freeburg in Baton Rouge would give schools money based on attendance data. But that, to me, seems ridiculous because you're punishing the school for something over which they have no control, and you're punishing the students that do go to school by taking funding away for the ones that don't go. Is this all as bass-ackwards to you as it seems to me?
Well, Tommy, I think you hit on it. And so let me start by saying I feel almost guilty criticizing Representative Barbara Freiberg. She's a local state rep here in Baton Rouge, and she's somebody who's been working on education issues for a long, long time. She was a classroom teacher. She was on the school board here in Baton Rouge for years. She was on the Metro Council, and since she joined the legislature, she has worked really hard on education issues, particularly early childhood education. So she's somebody who has a long record of really putting kids first. But I think the problem with this bill is exactly what you describe. We know that absenteeism is a problem across the board, but it's an especially big problem in schools that serve a lot of low-income kids. It's poor kids who may have a lot of family issues and family dynamics that make it harder for them to get to school. Maybe parents lack reliable transportation. Maybe there's chaos in the home. There's all kinds of things that the school has nothing to do about. And you're right, Tommy. I mean, my wife is a third-grade teacher, so in a low-income school here in Baton Rouge, so I hear about this every single day.
Same story, Jan. Third grade, same thing. And you hear the stories as well. The kids can't read, and they get the kids in third grade that can't read, and they expect the teachers to teach them other things, which is hard when you can't read when you're in third grade. And I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm just giving you the audience a snapshot of what it is. And then you can't get the parents to take them to school. So what exactly is the teacher or the school supposed to do?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, my wife literally just left for school, and there's really nothing that she can do. She teaches the kids who show up. And right now, the way the per pupil funding formula works is they take enrollment twice a year on October 1st and February 1st. Whatever the enrollment is in that school, you multiply that times the per student amount, and that's what the school gets. Now, maybe you have a class of 20 kids, but let's say only 15 of them show up on a particular day, or 12 because the weather is bad that day. It still takes the same teacher to teach that class. The costs of running that school don't go down. So I think the concern is if you start punishing schools that have higher rates of absenteeism, you know, I understand that the goal is to try to give schools an incentive to do something about this. But I think really the problem, as you said, is really more societal, and it has to do with factors that the school really can't control. So the concern is you would actually reduce money going to the places where those resources are needed the most.
Yeah, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. And the question is, what can the schools do? And I would ask the audience, if you got any questions or suggestions here, Oakland Heart Jeweler Talk and Text Line 504-260-1870. Text, data, and message rates may apply. Please don't text and drive. You got to understand also what happens here is the kid misses 3 days, 4 days, 5 days a week of school. They can barely read. They come in and they're behind. So what do you want the teacher to do? Do you want the teacher to stop everything and go back and hold the entire class back so you can catch up the two or three students that didn't come to school? Or do you just want to skip them and just keep teaching the rest of the class? But guess what? The LEAP test is coming up, or just happened, actually, and you're going to be judged by that as well. And the scores for those that don't show up, I think, are a zero. Is that right, Jan?
I think so.
Yeah. So that's what you're judged on. So y'all that think there's an easy solution to solving the education problems in this state, you need to talk to a couple of third grade teachers to find out what the hell's going on. I really mean that. And Jan just told you from his wife, and I can tell you from my family member. 651 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 656, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Jan Moeller, Executive Director of Invest in Louisiana, about the problem of absenteeism in schools. And it is a big problem that holds everybody back in a way, I guess. Jan, and this bill by the representative from Baton Rouge is misguided. And the only thing, and I don't mean to call her out or throw her under the bus for this, but Barbara Freiberg from Baton Rouge, she was a teacher. She's got to know. And what I'm getting at here, Jan, in my own way, is that there are things that will really help. There are things that will not help. She's got to know this is not going to do anything for absenteeism.
Well, again, I think I don't
mean to put you in an awkward spot, but
I think she's coming at this from a good place. But I think, and she said, I've heard her say she really just wants to spark a conversation about mm-hmm. how you do this. But the question is, what resources do schools need in order to try to reduce absenteeism, which I think everybody agrees is a problem, and taking away resources from the schools where absenteeism is the biggest problem doesn't seem like the right answer. Now, in California, they have a formula. You know, this all happens through a funding formula for education that mm-hmm. the state that BSEE, the Education Board, passes every year, and the legislature is supposed to approve it, though they haven't done that most years. California has a similar formula that is based on actual attendance, not just enrollment. But what they do is also give extra dollars to the schools with the highest needs, with highest poverty, more English language learners, more students with disabilities. But again, it's a question of what do you want the schools to do? I know anytime my kids are absent, if they're just late by 30 minutes, I get a text message from that school. I get a voicemail from that school. So schools are already doing what they can, but again, they can't control. They can't force a mom to put their kids on the bus. Maybe mom had to go to work a little early because a lot of parents are working two or three jobs, and those kids, it's on them. Maybe everybody doesn't have a mom and a dad to put the kid, get the kid off to school every day. So there's a lot of things that go into absenteeism, and I'm not sure this bill is the answer.
So other things making its way through the legislature that has other bills maybe that have your attention that could improve schools?
Well, I think the big question for the legislature right now, and let's just back up and say the schools, reading scores in Louisiana have improved significantly in the last couple of years. Teachers in public schools throughout the state are doing a heroic job under very difficult circumstances. They're in danger of getting a pay cut right now in the current budget. So the best thing the legislature can do is make sure teachers don't get a pay cut, that they renew the stipends that are expiring. And then let's have a conversation about how we get resources in the right way to the schools where absenteeism is really such a chronic problem and is keeping kids from catching up. And in fact, kids are falling farther and farther behind just because they can't make it to school every day.
Thank you, Jan. Appreciate your time as always. As my daddy used to say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We'll talk to Mike Bayham when we come back, Louisiana State Representative, about some bills that are making their way through the legislative session. And we'll talk to Keith Hinckley about the sediment diversion.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.